Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there. Hi there. Welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power and we shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems instead of defending positions. Well, America, and indeed the world, is living in two parallel and separate realities. In one reality, experts are praising the new vaccines as the only way to liberate us from the COVID pandemic and the lockdown. Those who are vaccine hesitant or doubt the efficiency or efficacy of masking and social distancing are seen as science deniers and ignorant, selfish Trumpsters. Meanwhile, in another reality, the vaccines, particularly if made mandatory or de facto mandatory through vaccine passports, are seen as untested, potentially dangerous, and an attempt to install medical totalitarianism. Critics of the vaccine as savior policy point to the censorship and deplatforming of any alternative use, including successful treatments of COVID cases that make hospitalization unnecessary. And they wonder how many deaths could have been avoided if these simple and inexpensive treatments had been publicized and made widely available. So, who or what is right? Or is there a middle ground as this seeming reality chasm gets wider and wider? Well, this week, we've re-invited the guest we had right at the beginning of the year, Diane Perlman, to discuss vaccine passports, censorship, the polarization we're seeing, and the psychological barriers to seeing the whole picture. She is in the process of establishing a new website that's going to offer irrefutable facts and undeniable evidence that the media has conveniently omitted so that we can make wiser choices around vaccinations and handling these crises in the future. Diane Perlman, as a PhD, is a clinical and political psychologist, conflict analyst, interdisciplinary social scientist, author, educator, mediator, and lifelong human rights advocate. She's an environmentalist, and she's also a patent holder. She's interested in the psychological dynamics of conflict and reconciliation, as well as strategies of win-win conflict transformation that can actually produce enduring security. Previously, she had a clinical practice in individual, couple, and family therapy, psychoneuroimmunology, and Jungian-oriented psychotherapy. Welcome, Diane.
Hi, Steve. Thank you so much for inviting me today.
Good. Well, you know, as I mentioned a few seconds ago, there's a real divide in this country, and I find myself right in the middle of it. A couple of months ago, when I told a friend that Trudy and I, like him, would not be planning to get the vaccine, he asked, "Have you been shunned yet?" Well, almost. We have a few friends who won't socialize with the unvaccinated, and we've also heard from other friends who, for various reasons, including being warned by their doctors the shot is counterindicated for their condition, other friends who are feeling isolated and confused because they have chosen to not get the jab. So today, I'm looking to explore several things with you, Diane. First, and here we have Newspeak alert, the vaccine hesitant, quote unquote, what the media says they are. Are they misled and misinformed, or are they aware of something most of the rest of us are not? Then number two, is there something the media is telling us that it's misleading? And are there important things that we're not being told? Three, the vaccine passport. Is it a practical step in reopening society or a dangerous step to what we are calling a grave new world? And finally, what are the psychological barriers toward people seeing the whole picture? So hopefully in our hour today, we're going to cover most of that. So Diane, let's start with you, okay? Your progressive credentials date back to, well, maybe date back to when you first began dating. How did you find yourself in this territory that seemingly belongs to Trump supporters and quote unquote alternative facts?
Yes, well, from my youth, when I became conscious of the Holocaust, in addition to being completely horrified by what humans could do to each other, I was very intrigued and psychologically curious. You know, one about how people could do such a thing, but also how did society allow it to happen? And I asked my mother, so how did you let this happen? She said, well, we didn't know. So I was gripped by this idea that you can't not know, and that people couldn't prevent something from happening if they couldn't imagine it or know it could happen. And then in 1981, I went to a symposium of Physicians for Social Responsibility on the medical consequences of nuclear war, and with Helen Caldicott and Vic Seidel and others. And that changed my life, and I've been involved in the issue ever since. And I felt like we didn't know the Holocaust happened, but we know nuclear war can happen, so we have to prevent it. So that was before I knew that Psychologists for Social Responsibility existed, which I've been very deeply involved with. But I put aside my shyness in 1983, after my second child was born, to become a speaker for Physicians for Social Responsibility on the image of the enemy, the psychology of the enemy, and exaggerating threats and sort of hyping up to arms buildups and war. And then, of course, in 2003, there was the buildup to the invasion of Iraq. Well, anyway, I've watched this movie many times, and what's going on right now feels very similar. And only way worse, because there's more universal consensus about the narrative that's being promoted.
In all of these other approaches, you know, the anti-nuclear, the working for peace, the recognition of fascism potential, and so on, you've obviously found yourself primarily on the quote-unquote progressive side. Well, now you've got this, the work that you're doing right now and the research uncovering some of the totalitarian aspects of this COVID crisis and shutdown, you're finding yourself at odds with a lot of people on the progressive side. How has this, tell us about that and how you've been navigating that.
Okay. First of all, and I think you also feel similarly about this, but I don't like the dichotomy of right and left. And I consider myself a thing off the axis and maybe more like a political therapist, or like what works, what, you know, being based in science or dynamics of increasing tension or decreasing tension. And I even have like a political maturity scale to, as an alternative to right-left thinking. And I think the two parties system is problematic and destructive, and, you know, makes us think in dualistic ways. So, like, if I'm a Democrat, I'm in this box, and the Republican is in another box, and I have to agree with all these set of things that are in my box, and that automatically puts me in opposition to somebody on the other side. I mean, it polarizes us without thinking, and it precludes dialogue. So I just want to start with that. Given that, I occasionally watch Fox News. I mean, I would be called progressive for sure, but I think in terms of problem solving. So I used to watch Fox News occasionally just as a political psychologist to try to understand what's going on. But in the many months before the election, I watched it much, much, much more also aside from COVID issues. And I would watch it with a mind of like, who would I have to be to think this way, or do they have a point on something? And I've also been writing about psychology of people who love Trump and humiliation, just as an aside. Anyway, given it, I don't think it's inevitable that Fox News and Republicans would be more questioning of COVID and so-called vaccines, and that MSNBC would, you know, completely be 100% in, you know, repeating the dominant narrative without question. So one thing I just want to say in the beginning, that these are not vaccines, and I think we shouldn't call them that. And what I've called them, as you know, is vaccine in name only. So that's Vino, sort of like Republican in name only, you know, rhinos and dinos. And I think that that's important because a few things. One is when people hear the word vaccine, they have like a huge positive lifetime of associations of vaccines saving us from polio and smallpox, plus all the controversy about it. And this is a technically completely different. With vaccine, you get a little bit of the antigen of, you know, the thing that you're being in your body, and then you mount an immune response against it. You take a small weakened amount. This injects RNA into the cells of the body and your cells create a spike protein. Anyway, the process is different. And, you know, we have decades of research and knowledge on conventional vaccines, but we have absolutely no long-term studies. We have no idea about the consequences or the long-term effects of these binos. So anyway, and the other thing is that in 1986, there was a law passed in Congress to hold pharmaceutical companies exempt from liability for any injuries from vaccines, unlike other drugs. So there's no, so when you call these vaccines, they also become, they're exempt from liability and they should be in a different category. So can we call them binos for now?
You know, first of all, I think there's two points that you made. One is that even though they are called vaccines, and in fact, the official Webster's definition of vaccine has been changed to accommodate these new innovations. But the other point that you made is that for the past 35 years, the vaccine companies, my joke, it's not that funny, is that apparently vaccinations provide 100% immunity in the sense that the companies are 100% immune from being held accountable for that. So for anything, any injuries and so on. I'm sure that some of our listeners already know about VAERS, V-A-R-E-S, but could you briefly tell us what was set up in 1986 and what kind of recourse people do have if they've been vaccine injured?
Okay. So before 1985, before that, the drug companies were getting a lot of lawsuits for injuries from vaccines. So they came to Congress and saying, we can't do this anymore. We're losing too much money on the lawsuits, so we can't keep making them if we're going to be sued. So they got Congress to pass the, I forget the name of the act, but anyway, holding them immune that they cannot be sued. But then they, as part of the process, they set up a reporting system, which is the VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, and a vaccine court. So if someone was injured, then they could go to the vaccine court. And, you know, some people could sue and get compensated if they prove their injuries. And I think well over $4 billion has been paid out since then.
Do you know if that money is something that the vaccine companies have put money into that fund, or is that a public fund that comes from taxpayer money? Do you know?
Okay, all right. So what I read is that every time anybody gets a shot, that every dose, 75 cents for each dose goes into a fund for that. And I think also, like, when we were kids, I got when I was five, I remember standing in line outside my elementary school. I'm 70 now, so I was born in 1950. I remember standing in line outside my elementary school, getting a sugar cube with a drop of polio. And then I have a smallpox on my arm. So I had two vaccinations. By now, people get, I think, 72 doses of 16 different vaccines by the age of 18. And I think it's like 49 of 14 before the age of 6, which is way earlier and more at one time than any other country in the world, and then in Europe. So that's what I've read about the money that goes into the funding for the vaccine compensation program, injury compensation program.
And there's also been many reports that how difficult it is to actually follow through and file and be actually be granted some of that money.
Right. And the other thing is that the VAERS reporting system, Harvard was paid $1 million to do a study a few years ago on the reporting, and they figured out that maybe only 1% of adverse reactions were reported. So now I hear somewhere between 1 and 10% are reported. So whatever is reported, you can imagine that the numbers multiple times higher, but we don't know.
Wow. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with Diane Perlman talking more about what we are not being told. This is Steve Behrman on WikiPolitiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Well, we're back on WikiPolitiki with our guest today, Diane Perlman. We're talking about the virus, the vaccine, et cetera, et cetera. This is something interesting. You're working on a new website where you're going to be offering education to people who want fact-based information that they probably are not getting from their mainstream media. So what are some examples of information that are irrefutable facts, and yet apparently the New York Times and other mainstream media have not seen fit to print them?
Okay, so one thought I have about the website, which I hope you will collaborate with me on, and I have another collaborator, acupuncture student named Jocelyn Clay. I'd like it to be a safe space, sort of outside the box and outside the conflict, for people to come to explore what's going on and to post articles and videos of people, say, including this doctor, Peter McCullough, who's talking about the early treatment. And just to have the complete, you know, so let's take a deep breath and sort of clear our minds, and that we're all flooded constantly with all these messages and information and fear and groupthink and disagreements with people. So I'd like to be a safe space where we can have dialogue and present information. So one of the things is that information about the immune system and how the immune system works, or the media sort of promotes a lot of fear, and that young, healthy people who have almost no chance of dying and have an extremely high probability of having no symptoms or very mild symptoms, like with my daughters did, and many people I know, feel like lightning could strike them and it's a crapshoot, and if they get it, that they could die. Of course, people are legitimately concerned about giving it to other people and having other people die. So one, there'd be information about the immune system, information about what a virus is, also information about drugs, repurposed drugs and nutritional supplements that address the COVID, like, very quickly and very early. I think maybe you have some ideas, too, about some. Also, that we have no idea about long-term studies, that these are not vaccines. We have no idea about long-term studies in, you know, what's going to happen years after the injection. And also, they're going to be giving boosters and more accumulation of shots.
Well, you know, the thing you mentioned first, one of the most compelling pieces that I've seen is that is his name McCullough, Dr. McCullough, who offered testimony in front of the Senate that basically said that there was virtually no program to address symptoms, working with people once they were they tested positive, not yet at the hospital, maybe not even maybe showing mild symptoms and no symptoms, how they could mitigate the situation at sooner. And it made me wonder how many deaths have occurred because people did not have this information. And I, you know, I've talked with over the past year a number of holistic practitioners who I will not name from around the country, people I've known for 25 or 30 years, who have successfully treated COVID. But if they told anyone, they would lose their medical license, or they would be they'd be under disciplinary orders, because these were quote unquote not approved treatments, even though anecdotally they worked. And the people that I spoke with had 100% success with this. So I have to wonder how many of those who went to the hospital and died did so unnecessarily because of the way media was presenting the situation and the information that it wasn't presenting. Your take?
Yes. So Peter McCullough, also Vladimir Zelenko, has a protocol, and he has an extremely high success rate, and he feels that maybe 80%, similar 80% of patients have died unnecessarily. And also Dr. Pierre Corey, who worked with Dr. Paul Marek, said that there's been no task force to look for repurposed drugs. So all these doctors that are doing this in these trials are not funded. They're mostly doing it on their own. And there are also trials in China and Italy, like from the very beginning of high dose intravenous vitamin C, very early on, which could stop a cytokine storm. So they're doing it now in some Long Island hospital health networks because the data shows that it works. But all these things are censored, and people don't know that they can do this. And the other thing is that there's an extremely, extremely high rate of death of people put on ventilators. And you remember in the beginning, everyone couldn't wait to get enough ventilators. And the other undeniable fact is that hospitals were being paid $13,000 for anyone that they could diagnose with COVID, and $39,000 for people put on ventilators who had a high percentage of dying. That sounds outrageous, and it sounds like it can't possibly be true, but it was fact-checked, and it's true.
That is amazing. That is amazing to me, because I heard about that. I heard about that, and I thought, well, you know what? There is so much misinformation about this. That has to be, that can't be true. But you're telling me that you can show, that you can cite sources that hospitals are paid $13,000 for every COVID, is that people who, for a COVID diagnosis?
Yeah, I mean, they could have diabetes. They could be in for diabetes. Other thing that Deborah Birx was saying, that people who die with COVID are being listed as people who die from COVID. So someone said you could, like, get killed in a car accident, you know, and if you had COVID. But I mean, I think more likely people with diabetes. And she said, like, she said herself, in Europe or other countries, if someone's listed as dying from certain causes, here we're going to list it as COVID. So now, that was about, you know, maybe a year ago I read that. Mm-hmm. And I think I fact-checked it since. I don't know that they're still doing that. They may very well be. But you might wonder why.
I might wonder why. Now, my main listeners might wonder why. So we're wondering why. Why is that?
So, I mean, the doctors, like Pierre Corey, and they're practically in tears. Testimony. I mean, actually, Dr. Pierre Corey, that he has a really good, I think it's like a 10-minute testimony on video. I don't know if you can put it out for your listeners. Mm-hmm. But he said he came before with another drug. He was talking about ivermectin. And he said, people are going to die. He was practically in tears. And he said, I'm traumatized by trying to get this information across and by not being listened to. So the general message that people get, I call it induced helplessness. There's a body of work in psychology called Learned Helplessness by Marty Seligman from Philadelphia, whom I know, basically that if you learn that nothing you do may, I mean, there are experiments with dogs being shocked and jumping over a grid, and that they learn to be helpless, and that even when they can't are free to jump, they don't, because they already learned that they can't. So when you feel helpless, you also have elevated levels of cortisol, which suppresses the immune system. But I call it like induced helplessness, that all we're getting in the media is anybody could die, the rates of infection are going up every day, and you just have to wait and say this is in the last year until Big Pharma comes and gives you a vaccine and even drugs. So they were pushing remdesivir and spending fortunes, and every day you hear about remdesivir. You don't hear about that now, right? Because it hardly did anything. But they put, so the thing is, you can new drugs can be patented and can make a lot of money. Ivermectin is 12 cents a dose, and Pierre Corey said that they did this, like, there were a lot of clinical trials. In Argentina, they gave it to 800 frontline healthcare workers, and zero got sick. And 58% in the control group got sick. And I heard, right before I went on the show, I heard on NPR a story about someone in South Africa who had someone who was sick, and that they knew that ivermectin didn't work, and that everyone said that ivermectin didn't work. And now also Dr. Peter McCullough, I just got an email from my friend whistleblower Colleen Rowley, who was Time Person of the Year, about how a so-called fact checker said that Peter McCullough was wrong about what he said, and that people under 50 don't need vaccinations. So, and people don't know that they can, I mean, some people are learning that you can take vitamin D3 plus K and C and zinc and get sunlight and fresh air and eat a healthy diet. And that if you're exposed to COVID, that your immune system is the best defense. So every time you hear one of these doctors say something that works, you're going to get 100 articles and people saying that they're wrong and it doesn't work. And I'll tell you one of the worst things. People who have recovered from, who have had COVID and have recovered, have natural herd immunity. And natural herd immunity is more robust, say, against more strains and variants. And it's also more enduring. If you get the so-called Divino, so-called vaccination, your body produces antibodies that react to that very, very, very specific antigen. But if you have natural immunity, it's much more robust and long-lasting. So first of all, after the COVID started happening, every single person who recovered and was healthy and had natural immunity should be free to go to work, to take care of people, you know, who are vulnerable, who have to be quarantined. I also want to say that everyone who has comorbidities like diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, obesity, asthma, is vulnerable. And those people absolutely have to be 100% completely protected, and they should not be exposed, and they should be quarantined. Healthy people, not so much. But people who have recovered have a role in society in addition to giving plasma. Anyway, they don't need to be vaccinated. And what Dr. Peter McCullough, who is the most published doctor in his field in the world in history. So he was saying people who recover don't need to be vaccinated. There's also a Dr. Human Nurchasm from University of Pennsylvania who got himself vaccinated against COVID. All his children are fully vaccinated according to the schedule, and the second FDA approves the vaccination for children, he's going to get them vaccinated. He's coming out and saying that people who have recovered from COVID should not be vaccinated, and the literature says they have a 3 times higher rate of adverse reactions, and even some like 30-year-olds and young doctors have died after getting vaccinated who had already had it, because if your immune system already has antibodies, you don't need that. So, you know, on the radio, they're saying if you have recovered from COVID, you can get it again and you should still get vaccinated. And Chris Cuomo on his show said you should definitely get vaccinated even if you've recovered. So they're giving people information that is actually endangering them. And then just yesterday, I got this so-called fact checker, you know, dismissing Dr. Peter McCullough, saying that he was wrong when he said that people shouldn't get vaccinated if they've recovered, that they should. And Dr. Human Nurchasm, the pro-vaccine doctor who's against vaccinating people who've recovered, he has a thing called screen before you vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
So that you should just screen that before you get that, before you get the Vinos, the so-called vaccine, the Vine mRNA or these shots, get screened. If your body already has immunity, then don't get shot, and you know, wait 8 months and check again. Although they think that the immunity is much more long lasting than that.
Which brings us to the next issue related to vaccines, and that is the article that you just published in Medium called "The Vaccine Passport and the Dynamics of Domination." So, I would imagine that if somebody is told to not get a vaccine, they've had COVID, they've told to not get a vaccine, and then, however, a certification of vaccine is required to fly here or go to this place or that. What's that all about? And tell us about your article and how is this, the vaccine passports, relate to the dynamics of domination?
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. And just one detail about the certification. So some people may know that in Israel, they already have a system, like it's called the Green Passport.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to show proof of vaccination, but they also allow people who have recovered. So if you want to go to a theater and you have your Green Passport, they'll let you in if you've had the Vinos, so-called vaccines. Or if you recover, so if you've had COVID and you're recovered, you can show proof. That's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Those are some realities.
In other words, you have to prove that you have the antibodies for COVID. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. And also, some people don't have antibodies but have T cell immunity. So that's too complex to get into here. So the fact, if someone does not have antibodies, it does not mean that they don't have immunity. They could have T cell immunity, and I don't know if there are other. And there is one test for that. So, all right. So the vaccine passport, and I just want to say here that It's too simplistic, pro-vaccine, anti-vaccine. It's much more complicated than that. But even if someone is 100% in favor of, and, you know, my best friends and relatives, as well as yours and most loved ones, accept the dominant narrative about this and feel that everyone in the world has to be get a vino, and that people who don't are a threat. So the vaccine passport is a different issue, and I want to be clear about that. So if someone thinks that everyone should get injected, the vaccine passport is a different path. And
okay,
we have warnings from that from Holocaust survivor Vera Sharav. Naomi Wolf has been all over the place. She wrote a book in 2008, I think, called The End of America, about the rise of fascism, and said this is the last state. And also this Israeli woman is talking about the tyranny of living with a green passport and how people are second-class citizens, and they started a new political party for freedom, and that people won't. So the concern with vaccine passports is that once this happens, that it's about surveillance, about having the government own your data. It's about creating a situation which exists now in China, where they can find you. If someone's a political activist and they don't like what they say, they can find them, they can see them travel, they can see wherever they go. So Naomi Wolf says it's not like if you sign on to like Uber or Facebook, you can sign in and have a password and have control over when you're in or out or whether you end the relationship. But with the vaccine passport, you don't. It's inescapable, and they have control of your data and your movements, and they could decide that you can't travel. They can decide your kid can't get into school. They can decide you can't get into college. They could decide you can't get paid. So it really opens the door for social control. I'm not knowledgeable about this, but of the people that I've listened to, like Naomi Wolf is the CEO of a tech company, so she knows how this works. And they're saying, you know, once this is like game over. Once this gets into place. So no matter what anyone believes about getting injections and everybody else, they should oppose the passport.
We're going to have to take a very short break right now. We'll be back with our guest, Diane Perlman. We'll talk a little bit more about the passports and then how we can begin to communicate about this. Again, above and beyond the political divide. Steve Behrman here, Wiki Politiki, back very soon.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. There is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to Black and brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Well, we're back. This has been a very quick and very deep conversation with Diane Perlman. Again, we're talking about what we've been told, what's more likely true. And I want to present a scenario, okay? So here's a scenario. As we know, when you disrupt what people know, when you disrupt the sense of truth and trustworthiness of the information that that people receive, then you can really disrupt the entire society. If we look at what happened during the Trump administration and the Trump election process and so on, there were things that were obvious, at least obvious to those of us who are not Trump fanatics, that he was lying about this, lying about this, lying about that. And because the media in the past has not been forthcoming about certain things, and I would say that the mainstream media tends to lie more by omission rather than commission. One might say that, let's say, forces like the Soviet Union, looking to disrupt our American life and create confusion and conflict and so on, would help intentionally spread disinformation about the official COVID narrative. And I know people who believe that, there's a concerted propaganda campaign on the part of, let's say, the Soviet Union, maybe even Donald Trump, to disrupt.
Wait,
our
you mean
regularly
Russia?
What was that?
You mean Russia?
Yeah, Russia. I'm sorry. There is no Soviet Union. I'm living in the past.
I'm with you there, too.
Yeah, disrupting. Okay. So I think that there are people who believe that all of this vaccine disinformation, questioning the official story is disinformation and so on, that's intentionally designed to disrupt our society and so on. You're a political psychologist, and so you have some understanding about resistance to hearing narratives that conflict with what we already believe. What's your take on that specific narrative that I've been that people have offered to me? And then how do we begin to ways that allow people to open up to the whole story?
Okay. Well, you might wonder. So the dominant narrative has to do with fear, fear of getting COVID, fear of giving COVID, and helplessness and passivity. There's almost zero information about what you can do to boost your immune system. Everything is about, let's say, public health is not the same as metabolic and immune health. So the focus is all about health, like behavior and distancing and contagion. It's not about your immune strength. But part of the, maybe a big part of the problem, like, why aren't they telling us about ivermectin and all these other inexpensive available treatments that have a high success rate of helping people stay out of the hospital? Well, Big Pharma is the biggest lobby in Congress, and they're a huge funder of all the major networks. Any show you watch has lots of drug company ads. And also NPR is funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The other thing is that there's tons of money to be made, by these injectables and by new patented drugs. And the other thing is that everything that's happening now is by emergency use authorization, EUA, and their rules. You can't just have emergency use for anything, anytime. So one of the rules is that if there's already an existing effective treatment available, then you can't issue an emergency use authorization for something that's untested. And the other thing, which horrifies me as much as anything, is that they want to do testing on children. And epidemiologist Newt Witkowski, who writes a lot about her, talks about herd immunity and how our policies are actually working at delaying this. Maybe I'll get into that. But according to the Institutional Review Board, Ethical Review for tests, you're not allowed to do experiments on children unless they have a direct benefit from it. So if you have a kid with a disease and you can do an experiment on, and there's nothing, no treatment, you can experiment on something that they can absolutely directly benefit on. So they're talking now about doing this with children who have almost zero chance of, not only that, they have almost zero chance of dying from COVID or getting very sick. Their immune systems work very well. But also, they can provide herd immunity for the rest of us. And I just want to say one thing about, or maybe more than one thing about herd immunity. You mentioned that the Webster's changed the definition of vaccine for this. The WHO, World Health Organization, they also changed their definition of herd immunity. And they changed the definition of pandemic. And also the World Health Organization had a meeting in December of 2019 on vaccine safety in Geneva. And they have an anthropologist, Heidi Larson, who was talking about messaging and saying we shouldn't use the term anti-vax anymore and we shouldn't be hostile to these people. Even if they ask stupid, ignorant questions, we should be nice to them and we should try to convince them. And they were very alarmed that even like doctors are questioning. Also, I just want to say that I hear a high, maybe 50% of doctors and different variable, like between 30 and 60% of nurses are not wanting to take these shots. So everyone is not just naive and ignorant. So there's an alternative reality that's created hugely by censorship. So there's lots and lots and lots of information that we don't hear. There are voices that we don't hear. So we hear the voices that are funded, and we hear the drug studies that are funded. And also being immersed in the medical model that, we, you know, people think in terms of health is like shots and pills and surgery, that we don't think about prevention and immunity. So there's manipulation of fear, censorship. And another thing is like mission creep. So in the beginning of March 2019, would you have imagined that we would have been shut down for 15 months?
Oh, no. I mean, this is, you know, it was going to be like 6 weeks or something like that.
Right. It's going to be a few weeks. And then they tell us that now there's so it's like one thing after another. And then I saw that there were plans for the vaccine passport were in place 20 months before the pandemic. So it's like the frog boiling in the water. Like there's this terrible metaphor. If you put a frog in boiling water, it'll jump out. But if you slowly boil it, they won't know to jump out. So it's creeped up slowly. And some of the techniques are like mystification. There's a good article by R.D. Lang on mystification, which is a plausible misrepresentation of reality, where forms of exploitation are represented as forms of benevolence. And the exploiters been exploited to feeling like either bad or mad to even think of rebellion. And you know, people are frightened. They become more look up to authority figures to protect them. You know, there's groupthink. So in my article, I go into lots of different psychological factors, personality and cognitive factors. And everything is black and white, all or nothing. So we can't think straight and we can't solve our problems. And there are solutions. So maybe just to be sure that we get this in, I'd like to maybe talk about what the best case scenario would have been or maybe could be now.
Sure, that would be fabulous. And by the way, on the WikiPoliticky page, we will have a link to the Medium article that we just talked about, the vaccine passport dynamics of domination. And that has a lot of the information about the mystification and the other tools of propaganda and misdirection that have been used to manage consent around this issue.
Okay. And there are a lot of hyperlinks to different articles about all these different aspects that you will not hear on the mainstream media. Okay, so what's the best case scenario and how do we get out of this? So one thing I've learned a lot from Newt Witkowski, who's an epidemiologist, and one thing he said is that every respiratory virus ever in history has always ended by developing herd immunity. And there are consensus of a lot of these censored doctors and scientists, different kinds of scientists about this. So the first thing, like I said, is everyone should get, you know, people should get a physical and they should diagnose whether they have comorbidities. Everyone who has diabetes, heart disease, asthma, obesity should be quarantined and they should be given social media and people should call them on the phone and they should be, you know, delivered food and they should be taken care of and maybe can even like buddy up with each other to have a social, you know, some kind of social network. And they should deal with their causes of their health and improve their health and reduce their comorbidities. And also a high number of minorities, as we all know, have disproportionately been sick and died. And in addition to racism and prejudice and the medical system and poor health care and sort of not believing in their like pain threshold, all these other issues is, you know, their food debt, there's a lot of processed food, a lot of junk food and poor nutrition and poor air quality and water. So as a society, we absolutely have to deal with that. And we have a lot of consciousness about that. So everyone who needs to be protected should be protected. Everybody else should be boosting their immune system. So there's healthcare in England, Charlotte Pulver's health. She provided these like resilience packets. She found that people who were very sick, she would give them vitamin D, C, zinc, a packet of nutrition, and that they would all get better within a day. And I've had that experience with someone who was very ill, and I took over a bunch of supplements, and her fever was down the next day. And everyone says this is a coincidence, of course, and there are thousands of coincidences that are exactly...
Those coincidence theories are at it again. Yes, those coincidence theories.
So,
not a conspiracy.
People on the front line, everyone should, and college campuses, and they should be open. Like, everyone should be getting asymptomatic or mild herd immunity and boosting their immune system. Another thing that when I grew up, everyone got measles, mumps, and chicken pox. Everybody, and everybody I know, no one was ever afraid of death. And what doctors would notice at that, I mean, it's different now because we don't have that herd immunity, but what doctors would notice is that after people would recover, that they would be resilient, that they would have growth spurts and they would change. So it was part of a way of maturing of the immune system. And Dr. Zach Butch also talks a lot about like what the virome is and what viruses are. And if you're really healthy, then your body should be able to handle a virus pretty quickly and you should come out of it ahead. And virus is part of the way that we adapt through evolution. Everyone should be healthy, and we should take care of our health and develop herd immunity. And if anyone does get symptoms, there are treatments that are available that work extremely well in the beginning. So I know people who are getting prescriptions of ivermectin that they just have at home, and people are taking D and zinc and all of these things. So we need to protect the vulnerable and create herd immunity. And Newt Witkowski also thinks that the lockdown has prevented herd immunity and has caused like all these variations and mutations are happening because it delays herd immunity so that the virus has time to do an immune escape and to mutate and to create, which wouldn't happen. And, you know, some people think, if we allowed herd immunity, that it would be gone in 6 weeks. So now we have, and also the natural course of epidemics, and that's the whole thing to study is how do epidemics naturally go? And they're different, but one thing that tends to happen is they mutate. They have strains that are much, much more contagious, but they're much less lethal. So you can imagine it starts out more intense and then it spreads faster, but it has a less of an impact and more people recover and then it fades away. So we had,
you know, what seems to be the case here is that there is a lot of information and a lot of deep knowledge out there in many different domains. And the biggest problem is that certain chunks of information that didn't exactly jibe with the official narrative, was deplatformed and people were prevented from addressing that. So none of these things, you know, there's no Walter Cronkite on the air to manage all of the political sides and angles and so on, so that you go, and that's the way it was. We're 40 years away from the last Walter Cronkite pronouncement. So what it sounds like you're saying is that instead of herd immunity, we're going for unheard of impunity. The impunity of a system that is deciding that it wants to dominate from the top down and is using this pandemic as an excuse to do that. Now, that might be an overconclusion. We haven't really talked about that, but perhaps in your article on the dynamics of domination, that really this seems to be a lot about domination. So we've got about a minute and a half left. I wish we had an hour and a half left. Well, why don't you talk a little bit more about that issue of domination, if you will, what perhaps might be in the way of other people on the progressive side recognizing the clear and present danger beyond vaccinations, but of this vaccination passport surveillance system.
Right. Well, it's terrifying to me. And also, many of us who are questioning things are rather astonished at how our dearest friends and colleagues and prominent people who've spent their entire lives and careers questioning authority and exposing corruption are just accepting the dominant narrative. And the other thing is that we don't hear anything else. You hear the same thing hundreds of times a day from 100% of everybody on the airwaves, basically, except a little bit for Fox. So I think it may be starting to change. There are lawsuits, and other time's up, but question everything and look for other sources of information. And we need to find each other and connect with each other and learn as much as we can and teach as much as we can.
Thank you so much, Diane Perlman, for helping us move the great uprising forward as we wake up and wise up and learn how to work together to find the likelier story. This is Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki. We'll be back again next week. Again, thank you so much, Diane, for sharing.
Thank you for having me.